Okay. Well, thank you. It's great being here, and thanks for hanging around for this discussion. End of 2 days, again, from the Woodrow Wilson Center. As you probably know, this work is funded by the Sloan Foundation. And so I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about what we've found out recently and also in the past about public perceptions. What I'm going to try to do is I'll review a little bit of the research that we've been doing on synthetic biology. I'm going to try to compare it with some of the new work from the Royal Academy of Engineering and also backward to what we did on nanotechnology, because we have about 4 or 5 years of work on nano right now. I'll share some observations about the larger social context in which SynBio is evolving, and I'll end with some near-term needs, which I would preface by saying these are sort of my own perceptions and ideas. So we've done 2 studies. The first one was a phone survey that we did last August of over 1,000 adults in the U.S., and we did 2 focus groups up in Baltimore last August. And we'll be repeating both of those, both the national survey and the focus groups, this August. So we'll have another set of data points. Okay, what did we find out from both of these? Well, not surprisingly, not many people have heard about synthetic biology. We found, well, 7% had heard a lot, 7% had heard something, but probably close to 90%, very little or nothing. Not surprising. If we compare this with nanotech, we also looked at that last year, a little bit higher saturation of nano. This, by the way, hasn't changed in 3 years, okay, in terms of public perception and awareness of nanotech. I think it was Dan Sarowitz yesterday asked this question, which I think is an interesting one, is do we reach a kind of saturation point in society about how much people really know about stuff like this, whether it's nanotech, nanobio, synbio. So it'll be interesting to see what happens to this August when we look at it again and see whether the nano awareness meter has moved to nanometer in 3 or 4 years. I doubt it, but it'll be interesting to find out. Now, even though they don't know anything about it, people venture a guess. We ask them about risks and benefits. A lot of them say nothing, 34%. But 21% said, oh, it sounds interesting. Sounds like the benefits will outweigh the risks. 16% say risks will outweigh the benefits. We give them some basic definitions. That shifts around a little bit. And a lot of them shift to risks are going to outweigh the benefits. And benefits will outweigh the risks. This middle piece, benefits and risks being equal, stays about the same. This is out of the focus groups. This gets back to this issue of apps. There's one particular app people really focused on, and that was biofuels. They liked this. We ran a bunch of things, sort of treating new diseases, cancer, environmental contamination sensing. There was a lot of interest. This is a very small sample, okay? But there was a lot of interest and excitement around biofuels. When we looked at the UK, Eleanor Pauls, where's Eleanor? Right here, did kind of a quick side-by-side. There was a lot of interest in biofuels in the Royal Academy of Engineering study. And so that there seems to be some kind of convergence around this is an interesting app. When we do the work in August in the focus groups, they will focus specifically on biofuels. We want to get a sense of how Americans are feeling about biofuels and whether if we sort of insert this piece on synthetic biology, whether it changes their perceptions or not. We also asked them about who should manage or regulate the risks. Federal government comes up high. In this one group with the females, actually they want the scientific community in there. The male group wants to ban all of this work altogether. There's a lot of, I'll explain this as we go on. There was a lot of sort of fundamental Christians in that group. Nobody really wants to trust the companies. But this is kind of interesting. We always ask this question. How do we do this? Again, going back to the UK, no real support for a ban, but they like checks and balances. They like independent scientific involvement in the regulatory process. It's not really that surprising. They think scientists should be part of the team. They don't want to ban it. They don't want to shut it down. I think most people see the promise here. Again, similar recommendations. They like the idea of openness and transparency. That's going to increase public trust. Again, I don't think there's a lot of things you wouldn't expect to see here. Open dialogue, listening and understanding. A lot of this, of course, is easier said than done, as most of us know. Now, when we did about 30 hours of focus groups for nanotech, and we were always testing these propositions. Do you want to shut down the technology, or do you trust people to self-regulate? In the U.S., we did them all over the U.S., in Seattle and Dallas and Philadelphia. There was never any support for shutting down the science. There was no support for self-regulation. So the idea that people are just going to self-regulate, nobody supported. Those are the bookends. Now, if we ask people this question, okay, how do you increase public confidence in nanotech? When you sort through all of the answers, there's absolute convergence on three things. First one is more transparency and disclosure. Pre-market testing, we don't want you to test the stuff on us. Okay? And the third thing is they like the idea of independent testing. So they like the idea of kind of a consumer's reports, underwriter lab, companies working with NGOs, some balancing of power. They don't trust industry doing all the testing. Again, whether this translates to synthetic bio, I don't know. But these are not unreasonable kinds of demands, I think, if you're dealing with emerging technologies. I think some challenges right now. It was stunning to watch these people react to this term, synthetic biology. Absolutely stunning. It just pushed their push buttons that nanotech never pushed for them. Okay, nano was not small technology. As soon as they heard synthetic biology, artificial life, cloning, I mean, you could see the neurons firing in their heads. So it goes back to one of my favorite books by Rees and Strauss. When a name is bad, things tend to get worse. When the name is good, things tend to get better. These are the marketing folks. They know that. So I'm not sure you can change the name, but I don't think I think you're dealing with that as a liability. I mean, it's just amazing. That was most of the stunning thing sitting behind the one-way glass is the impact of this term on people. And it was almost impossible to pull them back after their initial reaction, no matter what told them about synthetic biology. Other problems, obviously, a lot of definitions floating out there. I think what happened with nanotech is the NSF came in, produced a very precise definition, three-part definition early on, and enforced it aggressively. Well, that's possible with synthetic bio, I don't know, but there's a lot of definitions. The plain God issue won't go away. And there's no communication strategy. I can't find one. I can't find one in industry. I can't find one in any government. I don't think the scientific community has one. I think there's a huge potential for risk amplification. We're in the middle of a global pandemic. I mean, I think that heightens people's anxieties around biological threats and issues. Good science journalists are gone. They're dying out. So your ability to get anything covered well and in a balanced way is disappearing. This is an incredibly difficult area. We work with journalists sometimes for 6 or 7 months so they could write one halfway decent story on nanotech. Nobody's going to put in that kind of time if they're blogging. Right? So your ability to get anybody to cover really, really deep and well
anything about
SynBio is disappearing very quickly. U.S. NGOs learned something from nanotech. They're fairly engaged right now. They've already had a teach-in in San Francisco. They will do more than that. There will be other actors entering this space obliquely. Lloyd's of London just put you guys on the emerging risk list. Right? New report on synthetic biology. Lloyd's of London doesn't write insurance. They essentially shape the insurance market. And of course, the insurance folks were all over nanotech, the reinsurance folks, the insurance folks. So all over, what's going to happen now is the space is going to open up. And there'll be all kinds of actors coming in here from the financial sector, from the insurance sector, from the press, from the NGO sector that's going to change the dynamics of operating here. American public has experienced lots of failures of regulation. We can't deal with E. coli, salmonella, or lead in toys. Those are pretty simple. So you've got this huge trust gap. So what we've tracked trust in government agencies for 5 years now. Every single year it's gone down by 4 or 5 points. Underneath the government agencies are the businesses. Below the businesses are actually the White House and the Congress. Now, that might change. We're going to do this again this year to see whether the Obama administration is changing the trust curve. But you've got to live with this fact, because that trust plays a huge role in your ability to attract investments, to get insurance, to get into the marketplace. This was something that came out of work that the Cultural Cognition Project at Yale did. This was a web-based survey that was done of about 1,500 people on SynBio. Anyway, Tony Lazarowicz is up at Yale. He basically does a lot of work on perceptions of environmental risk. And what he's found out is there's certain people in the U.S. that basically are environmental risk naysayers. So as soon as you try to sort of tell them there's risks involved with something, they say, nah. And those people tend to be white, politically conservative, highly religious. All right? This is what they found. So going back over a bunch of different studies, basically this effect held for nuclear power, global warming, mad cow. They really, these people weren't concerned. This is what happened with synthetic biology. Okay? So there's something going on here that deserves a little bit more research, right? What's going on with these folks who really didn't care about any of this stuff? They didn't believe there were any risks here. Why are they up there, right? Also, what happens with polarization? This idea that we're just going to dump lots of good scientific information on folks. We've had this discussion upstairs and with other people about who is the public. Let me tell you what happens when you dump more information onto African Americans or Hispanics. Their trust goes down because they don't particularly trust industry. They don't trust the scientific community. So this is what's going on here with more information. We gave them lots more information. They started, compared to the white folks up at the top, with a huge gap. And the more information we gave them, they went like this. Same thing when there's a gender gap. Right? The people who love this are white males. Females, very little. I mean, they basically start with a gap, trust goes down. Political party, not a big factor between the Democrats and the Republicans. Ideologically, these are your liberals, and then there's conservatives and progressives. But the huge one, so we start breaking this public down into pieces, and you realize that you're going to have an incredibly differentiated strategy for dealing with folks. There is no one message. Okay, let's do the experts. Who would you believe? This is Bernie. Bernie worked for an NGO, teaches environmental science at Middlebury College. All right? And Stewart up at the top works for the Cato Institute, or whatever the equivalent is. What happens if I now give these people messages about a new technology? And how does that track into you folks? What happens is most of us make an association with these people within 150 milliseconds. And it's not surprising what we learned from this research was they basically trust the people that look like them and think like them. So who's giving the messages about synthetic biology becomes, or nanotech, or any new technology, becomes pretty critical. And what we found was, if I expect Bernie to say, nano's going to kill the world, and he comes out and says, there's actually some pretty interesting stuff going on here, and it's not that risky, and I happen to relate to Bernie, I'm much more likely to believe him than Stewart up in the top. Not surprising again, but you have to think about what the messenger is. So who are you going to listen to on SynBio? You've got some incredibly articulate scientists here, right? Some of them are in the room. But what happens if, maybe it's the new science advisor, Malcolm Gladwell. He's got to write a book on this, right? What if you turned Oprah loose? You talked about Rolling Stone. Well, it could get into Rolling Stone, but you may not have any control over what they write. Sir Hooney, NIH. The new head of the Food and Drug Administration, MD, woman. That's a very U.S.-centric group, but one can imagine the group for the U.K. or Germany or the EU, or who would the dream team look like, or who would be in there for the globe. This matters. And I think the one thing we found out, is that basically the worst thing that could happen is if there's one or two people that become associated, because the ability to create polarization is very high. So what you have to do is create a very, very balanced, diffuse, and dispersed and very, very, I think, sort of wide open deliberative climate that kind of neutralizes all the spatial biases. And you have to think about how you're going to do that. So some near-term needs, and I'll finish up. We definitely need more research. I mean, that's always the standard answer, right? We need more research. And we need it soon because of the fact that this area is moving very quickly. I think based on the research, then we need a lot more public communication engagement strategy, one that scales. We have an awful lot. We ran millions of dollars of experiments in public engagement with nanotech. We scaled up none of them. So all we've been doing is reaching about 20 or 30 people at a shot. And nobody's really figured out, you know, what really works, and how would you scale that up to have an impact? Risk research, I mean, the one thing that's going to calm the insurance folks down, there's only two things they care about. They want regulation, and they want risk research. And basically, we don't have it. And we're just beginning on one study for us on regulatory adequacy, but there's hardly any of that. So Paula asked for these numbers. Now, it's taken us five months to figure out what the federal government's spending. We don't have all the 2009 numbers, but it's $130 million in synthetic biology. It's about $30 million a year. When you peel the veil back, it looks almost exactly like nanotech. That means 98 or 99% of the money is being spent on applications and 1% on implications. There's no money in there for public engagement. There's a little bit of money for ELSI studies. There's nothing that we can find on risk assessment. I'll be more than glad to take anything from anybody in the government that changes that. But that's all we've been able to find. Those numbers should be on the web now, transparent to every single person out in the U.S. or any other country. It shouldn't take us 5 months to figure out what the government's doing about this. Lastly, obviously, people have talked a lot about this, more international cooperation. I think that's going to be key. I'll end with this little quote from Joan Didion. We tell ourselves stories to live. I mean, I think the one thing that's exciting about this area is there will be hundreds of stories told about synthetic biology. There's going to be stories about collaboration and cooperation and discovery. There'll be stories about cotton. But the thing what I would say is that the words we pick to tell those stories, and I don't care whether they're Swedish or German or Swahili or Chinese, are critical. The narrative structures are critical, and the people we pick or use to choose those stories are critical. So we have to start thinking about that. If we just kind of leave it to chance, then I think, you know, the whole system can become fairly chaotic fairly quickly. And those are some references that I tagged on there that if you need them, you can get them from the web. Thank you.